in residence program, including eligibility, selection process, and the application, can be found at kbu.fm/AIR2014.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:02 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, which has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com. The evening news is also made possible by the Museum of the Oregon Territory, presenting Willamette Falls, Where the Future Began, a day of exhibits, papermaking, workshops, film, and tribal art, Saturday, February 1st in Oregon City. Willamette Falls will include a blessing song by the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, the Once Lost Fish mural by Alex Schoenberg, a kids' concert by Spider Moccasin, and more. Details at clackamashistory.org. Coming up right now, the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, President Obama announces NSA reforms, but organizations such as the ACLU decry the fact that storage of mass data will continue.
Day laborers in Portland rally to save their workers' center.
California Governor Jerry Brown announced the state's worst drought in a century, warning its people and property are in danger.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 17th, 2014. I'm Keegan Herron.
And I'm Liam Delta. Several marches converged on Portland City Hall this afternoon to honor the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., calling for justice for workers and the houseless in Portland. Sisters of the Road Cafe, run by and for houseless people, organized one of the marches, along with an event promoting the Homeless Bill of Rights, which they call on the city to adopt as policy. Another rally was held at the Vosk Worker Rights and Education Center. KBOO reporters were there and bring us the sounds of the rally, beginning with former Mayor Tom Parter and followed by immigrant rights organizers Casey Jama and Marco Mejia.
Dr. King said, "It's always the right time to do the right thing." Portland, do the right thing. Thank you.
Portland, Oregon, we might be building and paving streets and building high-rises and putting together what we are calling a vision of how Portland should be look like next 20 years. But our community, particularly the laborers, are not included in that vision. So, as an Oregonians, as a Portlanders, we want to come together and ensure people who are at the bottom of this struggle should be uplifted. And you know, they can just say they can give 80% discount on Trader Joe's, or they may say there is no space for Workers' Center, but we are here today for one reason. We are here for one reason, to tell Portland and to tell this city, you cannot afford without a day labor center. We can't as a community. We need a day labor center.
Is it being called?
Yes.
Oh, it looks like it's called. What do you do when it's called? Si se puede.
Si se puede.
But louder, then you get warmer. Si se puede.
Si se puede.
Well, my name is Marco Mejia again, and I'm with Jobs with Justice today. Of course, day laborers are the members of this community, and without day laborers, as everyone said before, we won't get this fight, that we're going to win it. So we all together are going to win this fight. The labor movement, the women's movement, the community organizations, everyone here today, we're going to do it. So with that, we're going to start marching and continue this struggle.
Those were the sounds of a rally for workers' rights today at the Vos Center for Worker Rights and Education on Southeast Martin Luther King Boulevard in Portland.
An action took place early this morning at a Staples office store in Portland. Postal workers are concerned about a plan to place U.S. Postal Service facilities inside Staples office stores. KBOO's Jamie Partridge was there and brings us this report.
As part of a nationally coordinated week of action, delegations of postal workers and community allies are delivering letters of protest to as many of the 1,600 Staples office supply stores as possible, protesting the latest move to privatize and bust unions within the Postal Service. The Postal Service has opened up pilot postal units staffed by non-postal employees in more than 80 Staples stores in various parts of the country. If these pilot projects are successful, the Postal Service intends to roll out postal units in every Staples store. If these staple units are not staffed with union, family wage, postal employees, the American Postal Workers Union will ask members, families, friends, the community, to refrain from doing business with Staples. We're walking back to the manager's office, following the leaders of the American Postal Workers Union.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Brian Dunsmore with American Postal Workers Union. I don't know if you've heard it.
Oh, well, no, I've heard something. I just kind of caught whiff.
So it's your turn. We're just asking that you guys forward that to your district managers and...
Okay. All right. I'll forward it to him right now.
With the postal stores coming into some of the Staples, as postal workers, we're obviously not too pleased with that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Or organized Staples employees. We'd be happy to do that, too.
Why are you here today?
Well, I'm here I'm concerned about this whole Staples thing because I used to audit and train people who ran similar operations, and they were 100% troubled. There were just problems. First of all, you have to be trained. The computer doesn't know everything. So the post office needs to train anyone who does this sort of work. But then the public doesn't have a guarantee that that person has been completely vetted, fingerprinted, just completely known and completely responsible. In other words, if something is... if there's foul play on the part of an employee, that employee is going to jail. There will be consequences. And with the contract stations or the privately operated things, there isn't that kind of grasp of the security of what you're doing and the responsibility of the person who's doing it.
Thanks, Cass Martinez, former postal employee.
I'm with the American Postal Workers Union. I don't know if you guys have heard that. Or swinging by your stores.
I've not quite heard about it yet.
Is there actually a manager? You're the supervisor. Is there a manager?
The general manager is not here today.
Okay. So here's our letter. I don't know if you've heard that they're opening up postal stores in some of the Staples around the country, and we're protesting that because postal workers should be staffing those. And so if you can forward that to your store manager and district manager for us, we'd appreciate it. We're going to protest it and keep protesting it.
Right.
Hopefully you guys don't open up one here, because then we'll have to be out here picketing and doing our thing.
Okay.
If you guys are ever interested in becoming American Postal Workers Union people, we'll come organize you.
Yeah,
so
we're happy to organize the postal workers.
You want to tell us about why you're out here today?
We're trying to protect family wage jobs and the American middle class, and that's really what it comes down to. And in addition to that, we're trying to protect and preserve the safety and sanctity of the mail. The American public deserves to have a well-trained thoroughly background checked, the whole kit and caboodle when it comes to the handling of their mail. And we're concerned about not only the erosion of family wage jobs, but also the continued preservation of the mail.
Great. Daniel Cortez, American Postal Workers Union. What's your title?
I'm the district representative for the Oregon State Postal Workers Union, so northwestern Oregon is my territory.
Thank you, Daniel.
That was a report from KBOO's Jamie Partridge from an action this morning at several Staples office stores in Portland. Postal workers are challenging a plan to place U.S. postal stores inside of Staples.
At today's weekly City Club luncheon in Portland, a panel discussion focused on the launch of a new GED exam for high school dropouts. According to a new report, the state does not provide enough support for students who drop out of high school, partly because the GED is not widely available. Some of those who spoke on today's panel said the state has let down its teens and young adults.
I think one of the challenges for this population is that what contributed to these students dropping out of high school are the same things that challenge them in completing their GED, right? So the other piece of the equity component, obviously I agree with Diego that we need to make sure that these students don't drop out in the first place, but when they do drop out and in order to get them through the GED process, we need to make sure that the what I call wraparound services or the supports done in a culturally competent way are in place. For a lot of the students, it might be childcare, it may be transportation, they may be working to help support their family. We need to be able to address those issues. And I think for me, one of the reasons why it is so important that our community colleges have dedicated funding for GED programs is because that will enable them to meet the needs of the students directly in terms of the GED program, adult basic skills and adult basic education, but also will enable other services from DHS to provide the support services they desperately need. We are one of the only states in the nation that does not have dedicated funding for these programs at the community college level. That must change.
So I looked at other states and reasons why they came up with alternative tests, and those reasons were similar to the concerns that I brought up, but some of it was also who owns the GED, and it was a for-profit company named Pearson's VUE, and certain organizations within those states brought up the concern that they might be monopolizing what the future cost of that test might be, and I'm sure that states that took that into consideration listened to those organizations that were saying that. And I've heard similar concerns because I myself called a few community colleges and nonprofits to talk about the GED program. And the similar concerns came up. They don't know if the cost of the test is going to increase. They just don't know. And we don't really have a state mandate that controls the cost or if we subsidize it.
That was the author of a report calling for a revamped GED test in the state of Oregon, speaking at the Portland City Club earlier today.
A man is suing a Washington State dementia care home over the freezing death of his wife. The 88-year-old woman died of exposure in sub-freezing weather in an enclosed courtyard at the Canterbury Gardens Alzheimer's Care Center in late December of last year. The state found violations at the home that included doors without alarms and ruled Canterbury Gardens Care Center at fault. Dawn Johnson, the daughter of Norma Sheldon, said she couldn't understand why the doors to the courtyard weren't locked at night during a time of freezing weather. Donald and Norma Sheldon were married for 69 years. Donald Sheldon turns 90 years old next month and says he may not live to see the trial.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden has introduced a bill in Congress to remove a spending limit on dam safety improvements throughout the West. The limit was put in place with the passage of the original Reclamation Safety of Dams Act in 1978. It's currently set at $1.4 billion annually. Wyden's impetus for revising the spending cap comes from concerns that some dams and dikes were not built to withstand major earthquakes. Among those is Scoggins Dam, which created Hag Lake in Washington County, It sits on top of the Cascadia subduction zone, which is prone to earthquakes. Officials say that a 9.0 earthquake could destroy the dam and flood the properties of more than 4,000 people in the Tualatin River watershed. Hag Lake provides water to farmers in the Tualatin Valley Irrigation District, as well as drinking water for the cities of Lake Oswego, Hillsboro, Beaverton, and Forest Grove. The improvements to Scoggins Dam alone would cost an estimated $340 million. This is partly because the Bureau of Reclamation is considering building the dam 12 feet higher so that it can hold more water for the growing population in the Tualatin Valley. The process for Scoggins Dam is still in the planning stage, with an action plan not expected for another year or two.
A Freedom of Information Act document has revealed that federal regulators have allowed the dumping offshore fracking wastewater into the ocean off the coast of California without an environmental assessment. Mostly unknown to state officials and the public, offshore hydraulic fracturing has a categorical exclusion by federal regulators. Industry officials have stated that offshore fracking is a safe process and note that it also uses only a fraction of the amount of water used for fracking on land. Normally, fracking wastewater is stored underground, but with offshore drilling, the effluent is treated and then dumped into the ocean. Last year, California passed a controversial law for fracking on land that would require drillers to obtain permits, list the chemicals used in the fracturing process, and monitor water and air quality. But the new law does not apply to offshore fracking. Governor Jerry Brown has insisted that the regulations are sufficient, saying he supports both on and offshore drilling and gas exploration in California.
With precipitation as low as 20% in most parts of California, decreasing snowpack and shrinking reservoirs, Governor Jerry Brown has declared an official drought in California. Brown said that the state may experience the worst drought for the past 100 years, and it's creating conditions of extreme peril to persons and property. Firefighters are hard at work near Los Angeles battling a fire that has already destroyed 5 homes. The dry spell is expected to continue and will not alleviate the already high fire danger. The drought is not isolated to California. Federal officials have designated natural disaster areas in 11 western states and central states. The drought is expected to hit agricultural communities hardest, but farmers can apply for emergency low-interest loans through the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Oregon residents are being encouraged to check radon levels in their homes this month, as this byproduct of uranium is the leading cause of lung cancer deaths among non-smokers. Experts say winter is the best time to perform a radon test. KBOO's Ariel Devereaux has more, in collaboration with the Oregon News Service.
You can't see, smell, or taste it, but radon could be present in dangerous levels in your home, and winter is the best time to find out. A radon test kit includes an envelope that remains open in an indoor space for several days, then is sealed and sent to a lab for analysis. Brett Sherry, the state radon coordinator for the Oregon Health Authority, says radon is a dangerous byproduct of decaying uranium, which occurs naturally in the soil. When doors and windows are closed in the colder winter months, he says radon levels are easier to detect.
Typically, our homes are under negative pressure, so they wind up acting like a big vacuum and sucking that radon gas out of the soil and pulling it into crawl spaces and basements and then up into the house.
Radon has been identified as the second leading cause of lung cancer and claims the lives of more than 20,000 Americans each year. Inexpensive radon tests are available at most hardware stores or online. Sherry says test results indicate 1/4 to 1/3 of homes in the Portland metro area have high enough radon levels to be of concern. And radon buildup can occur in buildings anywhere in the state. Testing is just the first step. Because there's no safe level of exposure, people who find elevated radon levels have to take action. Sherry says he often hears from homeowners who don't realize they have a radon problem until they're ready to move.
And then when they sell, the buyer has the house tested for radon, and if it's found, the seller usually winds up paying for the system anyway. So you might as well find out if there's a problem now, fix it, and actually enjoy the benefits before you sell the home.
January is Radon Action Month, More information about radon testing, exposure, and mitigation is available from the Oregon Health Authority or the National Radon Information Hotline at 1-800-SOS-RADON. For KBOO News, I'm Ariel Devereaux.
Freedom Industries, the company that contaminated the drinking water for over 300,000 residents of West Virginia, is filing for bankruptcy. The spill occurred last Thursday when 7,500 gallons of the chemical methyl cyclohexane methanol, or MCHM, leaked into the Elk River. Residents reported a licorice smell coming from the river at 8 o'clock in the morning, but it wasn't reported by Freedom Industries until noon. MCHM is known to cause skin and eye irritation and damage to internal organs if swallowed. Affected residents were supplied with bottled water for 5 days after the spill was declared a state and a federal emergency. Freedom Industries currently owes the IRS $2.4 million and other unsecured creditors $3.6 million. By filing for bankruptcy, the company is trying to sidestep the more than two dozen lawsuits pending from the recent spill.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin after this newscast, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. Today, Fiona Musumba will speak about the barriers to education for girls in rural Kenya and how her group, the Center for Disadvantaged Girls, is fighting those barriers. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. This weekend's weather calls for partly cloudy skies with highs in the low 50s and lows dipping down into the upper 30s. The moon is full. Sunrise is at 7:45 a.m. and sunset is at 4:56 p.m. Today marks the 13th anniversary of the start of Operation Desert Storm. In today's Radcast, the only citizen-led radiation count on the air, radiation levels for today are 30 counts per minute in North Portland, high of 42. Damascus, Oregon has a count of 31 CPM, high of 54. Powell Butte measures 27 CPM. In Raleigh Hills, the radiation count is 32 CPM, high of 53. Seaside, Oregon has 32 CPM, high of 61. Hanford, Washington has 28 CPM, high of 50. And Sitka, Alaska has a radiation count of 33 counts per minute with spikes up to 56. EPA alert levels start at 100 CPM. More information can be found at radcast.org.
It's 5:25. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Who says the economy is down and that consumers aren't willing to spend in order to stimulate new economic growth? The problem with gloomy economists and skittish policymakers is that they don't know where to look for signs that boom times are back, baby. For example, take auto sales. Yeah, overall, they're putzing along at a moderate to low pace, but open your eyes, people. Do you not see that Maserati sales were up 55% last year? Or that Rolls-Royce, Lamborghini, Porsche, and Bentley also produced double-digit increases? Listen to Matt Lavin, a Cleveland high roller who told the New York Times that he bought three Mercedes last year, one for $237,000, another for $165,000, and an auxiliary $97,000 number for his wife. Extravagant? It's all a matter of perspective. I look at it as I don't have a boat, Matt explains. There you go. Economics is all about having a positive attitude. So, with a booming stock market, high-tech wealth bubbling like crazy, and Fortune 500 CEOs making big bales of hay while the sun shines, what's not to like about America's economic future? An automotive lifestyle consultant told The Times, Luxury is not a dirty word anymore. Now, isn't that a telling insight? You see, when Wall Street crashed 6 years ago, then got bailed out by Washington while the middle class sank, many of your 1%ers and higher got squeamish about living the luxurious life they deserve. But that's not the...
A Portland area activist who is among the group of plaintiffs who filed suit against the U.S. government has been saddled with a mysterious illness since February of 2012. The lawsuit aimed at nullifying the National Defense Authorization Act late in 2011. Tangerine Bolin has yet to get a diagnosis for her condition, and a crowdsource funding campaign has been established to help with expenses which have already caused her to file bankruptcy. She spoke with KABU reporter Robin Ryan about the frustration, the discomfort, and the irony of her situation as someone with an educational background in healthcare policy.
I'm talking with Tangerine Bolin. She is a Portland activist. She was one of the many plaintiffs against the United States trying to stop the National Defense Authorization Act, but we're talking about something different today. You've had some issues since early in 2012 with your health, have you not? What is your current condition?
Well, unfortunately, we thought we had a diagnosis, but we don't. I have some kind of very severe neurological disease. Something attacked my brain and spinal cord right after we filed our lawsuit in February of 2012, and I've been sick actually ever since. It's been almost 2 years, and my symptoms are very severe neurological pain and some short-term memory loss, among other things. So it's been a heck of a ride for a couple years.
And can you share with our listeners your experience in trying to obtain a diagnosis for your condition?
It has been absolutely unbelievable what I've been through. I essentially have been quite effectively blocked from care until just a couple months ago, and I got sick in February of 2012.
I imagine at some point somebody said, we think it's this, we think it's that. What have been some of the leading candidates?
Well, originally we thought that I had chronic Lyme disease. I'd grown up around horses. I'd been bitten by ticks when I was young. But I had extensive testing we paid for out of pocket in the beginning, and it was not that. We then thought it was MS. So I was able to get a spinal tap, a couple MRIs. They didn't see anything on my brain, and the spinal tap looked fine as well. Much later, and in fact only recently, the circulating theory has been that I have something called severe systemic interstitial cystitis, or IC for short. It's confusing, though, because IC is considered a pelvic floor disease. A lot of people who fall on their tailbones, and I fell on my tailbone in 2010 in the winter, a lot of people who fall on their tailbones end up getting a pelvic injury. And that can later lead to a neurological condition. In fact, in several other countries, that's considered a medical crisis or a medical emergency. We unfortunately are not that evolved yet here about that, and we need to be, because it's absolutely devastating.
For our listeners who would like to get involved and help,
the web address is fundly.com/team-tangerine.
I'm Robin Ryan, and you're listening to KABU News.
Another lawsuit looms for Facebook on the issue of transparency. This time it's a class action placed by Matthew Campbell from Arkansas and Michael Hurley from Oregon on behalf of 160 million Facebook users. The claims are that Facebook is trying to skirt the Electronic Communications Privacy Act to scan private messages without prior consent by the users to mine information for advertisers. Facebook claims that the social media network is free and was designed to share information. The social media giant asserts that it must make money through advertising since the site is offered free for users. But the claimants insist that Facebook is not transparent about what information is scanned and that privacy issues are buried deep in the terms and conditions and not readily understood by most users. This legal action may not be the end of Facebook, but the social media giant has faced a plethora of challenges for its lack of transparency of data mining for profit.
President Obama spoke this morning and announced the revamping of the National Security Agency's vast surveillance powers. He said that the government will no longer retain the records of every phone call, but these records will continue to be maintained by some unnamed non-government entity. He also mentioned Edward Snowden several times.
Of course, day laborers are the members of this community, and without day laborers, as everyone said before, we won't get this fight, that we're going to win it. So we all together are going to win this fight. The labor movement, the women's movement, the community organizations, everyone here today, we're going to do it. So with that, we're going to start marching and continue this struggle.
The ACLU issued a statement following the speech by the president this morning, saying they found it troubling that bulk data collection would continue. The organization points out that the president's own review panel recommended that bulk data collection be ended. For more, I spoke with Patrick Toomey, a lawyer with the ACLU. According to President Obama's speech, what are the significant changes that will be made regarding NSA policy?
The president in his speech acknowledged some important and vital privacy principles that apply to the NSA's collection of Americans' data and communications. And he outlined some steps that we think are very significant, including increased transparency for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, improved checks and balances at the FISA Court through the creation of a panel of privacy advocates, and increased privacy protections for non-U.S. citizens abroad. But the president's decision not to end bulk collection and retention of Americans' data on a wide scale remains highly troubling, and we believe that the president missed an opportunity to embrace decisively the end of bulk collection of Americans' metadata and other communications.
So the changes that were suggested, when will they come into effect?
We expect some of the changes to come into effect immediately. The president issued a presidential directive that outlined some of the policy changes that he proposed. However, there are a number of changes that the president has deferred or not even adopted in full at this stage, that he has ordered officials in the executive branch to study further. And most importantly, that includes the president's stated desire to move the mass call tracking program, which collects phone records for every phone call placed in the U.S., outside of